You mean like sort of on?
I guess I love you.
Imagine a new
you. You ever lost your touch?
You mean like sort of on?
It's hard to believe the drama is over.
I see you ever lost your touch?
You mean like sort of on?
I guess I love you.
It's hard to believe the drama is
you
over.
Lost your touch?
Well, that's all the scripted stuff.
Hi, I'm Robert Ballantyne. Welcome to another edition of Pop Journalism, a show that takes a different look at our media and pop culture. This week we take a behind-the-scenes look at our own show and reveal the secrets of radio production. We'll also have an interview with actress-comedian Janine Garofalo. She starred in such films as The Truth About Cats and Dogs and Reality Bites. Also returning our regular segments, Channel Surfing, and The Week in Review. We'll also be giving away some CDs this week, so you'll want to stick around. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
heat wave. Yes, we here in Toronto know what that's all about. All last week we faced sweltering temperatures, sometimes reaching up to 47 degrees Celsius, including the humidity. And it's not over yet. We have temperatures of 32 degrees today. Yikes. Well, I guess it's summer. No use complaining, right? But combined with the garbage on the streets due to the city strike, the heat didn't help matters much. On the way to the subway, I actually saw maggots crawling out of the garbage on Dundas Street. Really nice to see. And the smell is just unbearable in some places. We'll talk more about that situation and other media events that tickled our fancy this week. That's right, it's time for the Week in Review. Here we go. Week in Review. In Review. Garbage keeps piling up. No, not TV reality shows, but real garbage. The Toronto Civic Workers Strike is hitting its second week now. It's the biggest municipal strike in Canadian history. The strikers include those who pick up garbage, and because of that, waste has been piling up and rotting on city streets. Mayor Mel Lastman has noticed this problem, along with the rest of us.
I feel sick about what's happening to the city. I feel sick about the garbage out there.
Toronto faced a sweltering heat wave this week, which only made the conditions worse. Not to mention, inside city workers, including daycare and clerical staff, joined the strike. The union representing city workers say they're striking to protect their jobs from privatization.
These workers, who are giving the best years of their life to this city, shouldn't be thrown on the garbage heap that the city decides to contracting out.
It's bad timing for tourism, though, as attractions like this weekend's Molson Indy are drawing visitors by the hundreds of thousands. That means more garbage and bad impressions of the city from visitors. The only population benefiting from the piles of waste is vermin. Residents are tossing their trash into parks and backyards, and a health expert appeared on CBC News to help explain what this means for the rat population.
Rats have increased dramatically in the past time since the garbage has come out. We've been diligent going after them, trying to identify the problem. A lot of the people have the rats on the outside, but that's the beginning of when they do get to the inside of the property. And if there's rats there and they step on one, they might have a chance on being bitten by one of them. They're known for carrying things like rabies and different diseases. Some of the other problems, you know, they've been known for carrying the plague, and that was way back, and it killed millions of people.
The plague, eh? Yeah. Well, so far the city doesn't think the health threat is that severe yet. But citizens, be calm. The city's keeping an eye on the problem. Oh, thank goodness.
If the hot weather continues, if the continued accumulation of garbage continues unabated, that it is only going to be a matter of time before we do see rodent infestations that could present a hazard to the public.
Until then, we'll keep putting up with the smell on the streets. And who's going to forget what the health expert told us?
The plague, and that was way back, and it killed millions of people.
The U.S. military is infamous for delivering cryptic press conferences, but their technical jargon and doublespeak has infected the English language anyway, usually through the media. Take the word incursion, which has been used thousands of times to describe attacks on Palestinians by Israel. It's an appropriate word in some respects. Its definition is, quote, an aggressive entrance into a foreign territory, a raid or invasion. But let's face it, incursion means invasion or attack.
An incursion is an invasion or an attack.
Anyway, U.S. military jargon reached absurdity this week. Spokesperson General Roger King, in a press conference, described an attack that killed about 40 people in Kabul, Afghanistan. It was a mistake. Instead of hitting Al-Qaeda operatives, the bomb hit a wedding party in an Afghan village.
The coalition forces were moving to conduct an operation. They came under fire. They called in close air support. Anti-aircraft fire was fired at the aircraft, and those targets were engaged.
Is silence copyrighted? Well, that's the question facing British composer and producer Mike Batt. He put together a 1-minute silent track on a recent album. It was in a joking nod to John Cage, an avant-garde composer who died in 1992. He credited this silent track to Cage's own silent composition, titled 4 Minutes and 33 Seconds. Send in the copyright lawyers. And that's exactly what happened. Cage's publisher sent a notice of copyright infringement and claimed royalties on the track. A representative of Cage's American publisher said that the media are trying to make the publisher look foolish. And it was Bat, after all, who credited Cage as the composer. And some strange news today to give you. A sweaty-footed man in Amsterdam caused a stink by removing his shoes in a university library. The 39-year-old Rotterdam man was fined 250 euros, which is about $375 Canadian, for defying a ban on taking off shoes in a college library. The magistrates decided his sweaty feet smelled so bad that he was a public nuisance. A recent British survey shows strange examples of how the Brits mistreat their cars. Apparently, failing to look after our cars properly can knock as much as 1/3 off their resale price. Here are some bizarre examples to come from the survey. One case of bizarre treatment was the woman who stuck pictures of her pop idol Cliff Richards on the car windows using super glue. Car dealers polled said some people try to sell their cars stuffed full of rubbish, smelling badly, and with suspect stains on the upholstery. And moving on. Finally, some news from my hometown of Winnipeg. Two former members of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police were convicted of assault with a weapon after attacking Winnipeg City police officers with fruit and vegetables. The two retired Mounties, who are brothers, were sentenced on Tuesday to 2 months in jail. The police arrived outside their downtown apartment to investigate an unrelated break-in. The two drunk former RCMP officers then decided to hurl oranges at them from their 19th floor suite. They reloaded with apples and then cooking onions. The Winnipeg police officers later testified that they feared for their safety when the oranges and onions started exploding around them. When the officers went to their suite, they pretended to be asleep. Then the two former RCMP people tried to blame their girlfriend for throwing fruit. But at a trial, a physiotherapist testified she was too petite to throw the oranges and onions that far. In court, the brothers were referred to as Dumb and Dumber and the Gruesome Twosome. And now you know why I moved to Toronto.
Raindrops. sitting on a purse train, laughing at your own jokes again. Sun splits the trees into beautiful broken light. Never cry more tears than you could hold in your hand. When all the walls have brushed, it's a sacred bone.
Simply gorgeous song from Beth Orton. That's Paris Train. And before that was Kelly Ali with Sunlight in the Rain. By the way, Beth Orton's new album is called Daybreaker and is out on July 30th. Now on to our regular segment called Channel Surfing. This is where we randomly search through channels on a random day and record the audio that comes from the television. The results are usually kind of creepy, kind of interesting, and sometimes just plain strange. So without further ado, here is the second edition of Channel Surfing.
Hurry up! I don't want to be late!
I've been studying. I want to be a great coach. Go ahead. Ask me what the afterbirth is.
Oh, yes, and punish Lisa for lying to us.
We answer the real needs of our customers.
We've got special prices in every department.
Look, things didn't really turn out how I wanted them to.
No pain.
Grab some more calls because there are so many people calling in. Let's go to Rose on line two. Hello, Rose.
Significance under the Ontario Heritage Act.
Faites souci pour.
Dans le midi de la.
To ABC.
Oh,
because, first of all, only the person's head is above the water.
I feel that the city wasn't prepared properly for this strike.
1797, transferring power to his successor.
And may I just read, I have just discovered destiny. What an ethereal, soothing fragrance.
In the meantime, he has appointed me to your church.
Free self-insulation kit.
The Maple Leaf Wrestling, yeah. Out where we're from, it was All-Star Wrestling.
Steven, no problem to tell you about. That's good news. Down by the...
Miss you.
I miss you guys, too.
To the special Roberto Carlos, to see Roberto Carlos got food the way they believe.
Tracy finishes up the effect inside.
A tournament of skill. Experience the 11th century.
See how generous she is.
Done the job on a cold, too, if you catch it soon enough.
Number bed can help you sleep better. We guarantee it.
88 dual full recline sofa, only $788.
Money.
Watching real life stories on Life Network.
In most hypothermia situations, drowning is merely the final cause of death.
And you'll get a scratch card and a pack of new Juicy Fruit sugar-free pellets.
Your hair smells like cinnamon you're shaving with a pink razor.
I thought the black would maybe be a little bit too dramatic, so I had suggested the thunder gray color.
More of the taste you go for.
Juicing Positively Radiant Daily Moisturizer. With soft natural fibers and natural moisturizers, it's the closest thing to mom.
Yeah.
the drama is over.
Tragedy. Until you haven't lost your touch.
It's probably not a big secret that most of this show is pre-recorded. The main reason is because it sounds better. Sound effects and news clips fit together perfectly because we work hard on it. And the other reason is because it's hard to sound alert on Sunday mornings. Regular listeners know that most, if not all, other shows on CKLN are broadcast live. It's more urgent and hosts can respond to breaking news, but usually it just leaves more time for errors. As I have done in the past, I learned to pre-record from experience. What the f*** is going on here? Why isn't the f***ing phone working? Here at CKLN, all of our show's hosts are volunteers. Often only two people, or sometimes just one lonely DJ, hosts the show and works the soundboard simultaneously. Major commercial stations like CBC Radio have bigger staffs and are paid to be perfectionists. Even then, things go wrong. At Pop Journalism, I am the sole production person. I use my own equipment and audio editors to put the show together. Take this segment, for example. The Media Odd Couple of the Week has to be The National's Peter Mansbridge interviewing U2's Bono.
He's known simply as Bono, short in name, long in reputation.
You remember that clip, right? It was in the last Week in Review edition. That 52-second news clip took over 2 hours to make. First, I grabbed audio from The National, which I taped the night before. Then I took that audio, edited out the unimportant parts, or the parts I wasn't going to use. Once I did that, I wrote out a script. Then I recorded my vocals and mixed it with the clips. Voila, 52 seconds of media analysis fun. But it takes a lot of time, and that's just one little clip. Imagine longer interviews like the one I did last week with Catherine Dunphy.
We're joined right now with Catherine Dunphy, author of Morgan Taller, A Difficult Hero, which was nominated for a Governor General Award, and who's also a reporter with the Toronto Star.
Sounds good, right? Well, it wasn't always so slick. You probably have noticed the difference between audio when people call into radio shows and when they're in the studio. There's a big difference. It's because phone audio quality is horrible. I use a filter on my phone to remove hiss for interviews. And I still have to use all kinds of audio software to fix it up. Radio ain't pretty, folks. It's a lot of tedious work sitting by the computer. But that's just the technical stuff. There's a lot of things I edit out for style reasons. Let's go back to my interview with Catherine Dunphy last week.
When did you start as a journalist?
Oh my God, I knew you were going to ask that. I'm trying to think now.
It sounds fine, but I did a little bit of editing.
So, when did you start as a journalist?
Oh my God, I knew you were going to ask that. I'm trying to think.
1994?
Yeah, sure.
Kathy was nice about it, but those are the kind of moments you're thankful you're not live on the air. And you can edit it out without anyone knowing about it. Okay, welcome back. Now we have our segment with Janine Garofalo. She's an actor and comedian who performed at the Democracy Rising rally in New Haven, Connecticut on June 30th, 2002. The Independent Media Center and WBIX Radio were there to broadcast a live web stream of the day's speeches and entertainment. And after her comedy routine, Ms. Garofalo stopped by to chat with them. And here's the result.
Well, as you can see here, we have this little chat IRC thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people out there who really are big fans and,
oh, that's nice.
And like what you're up to. Let me ask you this.
Sure.
What would you say about voting? I mean, you know people don't vote in this country.
Right. Well, I think that the reason there's a lot of people in entertainment who are sometimes involved in civic or social programs is because our government doesn't get involved in civic or social programs, so people know that it's important to take a recognizable face to get people galvanized and interested to do other things. So it's not like the celebrity is sitting there thinking, boy, I'm important, I should be asked to do this. It's because the government doesn't galvanize people, and they cut social programs, or they cut funding for different political things, so that they say, well, I'm going to get Sharon Stone to speak for AMFAR. I'm going to get, Robert Downey Jr. to speak on behalf of the Democratic Party. So I don't know that it's necessarily inherent that a person in entertainment makes it part of their life, but I think it falls, they are asked to do it by people because there's no way to sort of, for not being very articulate right now, but there's no way for a lot of people to get access to a lot of information, because the mainstream media doesn't give you access to a lot of information.
So you're involved in indie media here,
mm-hmm.
from the DC Indie Media Center. Do you listen to it, or are you aware of the indie media movement as its current sort of incarnation?
Am I aware of the indie media movement in the grand context, or I mean this in particular, your indie media movement? I don't use a computer. I hate to admit it, but I'm a bit of a neo-Luddite. I do not use a computer, and people don't believe me when I say that, so I'm not familiar with any sort of
computer
movement. I like to read regular books and write things longhand.
So what kind of recommendations would you give to teenage women who are just starting out in vocalizing their opinions politically and things, that give them sort of that oomph that they might need to say, okay, screw all of this, I'm not going to stay shut up anymore? Because we've got a lot of the kinds of folks, men and women, young boys and girls, who are silent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say this advice would go to both genders, but women have an even tougher road to hoe in being politically active, in that they have to fight to be taken seriously and to be heard. I think young women need to really assert themselves, and young men too, but young women in our country are treated as second-class citizens for the most part, and I think that they really need to find their strength and their voice at a young age and try very hard not to care about other people's negative opinions of what they have to say. I think women also need to get away from the cultural constraints of aesthetics. Like, they have to ignore how the media says you have to look, and all that they need to be concerned is with what they have to say. So don't worry how you look, just worry about what you say, because don't buy the media beauty myth. Don't even worry about that. Just make yourself cerebral and just worry about the life of the mind. Don't worry about your physical appearance.
What kind of projects are you working on, man?
What kind of projects am I working on? Nothing.
What
am I up to right now? Just I've been on a stand-up tour for a year, so that'll be ending at the end of July. So that's what I've been doing.
What's the future look like for Janine Garofalo?
I don't know, because my crystal ball is busted. I don't know. Totally busted.
Well, what do you think of this rally? I mean, at your experience, what do you think of this kind of thing?
Well, I think this kind of thing is great. I wish the mainstream media would cover it. I wish that there was more access to these types of things, and I wish that this was filled to capacity, and I wish that the Yale students were in session right now and that gay pride wasn't in conflict with this today, because I think that if Yale was in session right now and gay pride parades weren't going on right now, this place would be totally full. But I just wish that these things weren't the rarity. I wish they weren't the exception. I wish they were the rule. I wish that Ralph Nader's message and Jella Biafra's message and Amy Goodman's message was out there constantly, constantly, constantly in the mainstream and not just the alternative media.
I have a question. A lot of people say that people in the alternative media and the left in general talk to the choir. Mm-hmm. And I've heard the argument phrased, not so much that talking to the choir, but that the megaphone isn't big enough. Mm-hmm. As somebody who's involved in media as a profession, do you have any ideas on how that megaphone can be made larger?
Well, it's true. The voices of the left tend to preach to the converted because that's a natural. There's a natural attraction there that like minds are going to gravitate towards one another. Unfortunately, the conservative voices and the voices to the right have a forum, a public forum, constantly. You know, the Fox News Network, Rupert Murdoch's Fox News Network, very conservative, and the mainstream media. That's a myth about the liberal media. There is no such thing as a liberal media. There is a shitty media, and there's a woefully inadequate media. And there is a conservative media, and that's about the extent of it. And I don't know what the answer is, because it would have to be like a road to Damascus-style conversion on everyone's part within the media to give a voice to the left. And for some reason, most people in the media are unwilling to do that. The corporate-owned interests are unwilling to do that. So I wish I knew the answer to that. So
time you have, but if you were to really change corporate media, what kind of tactics would you suggest that you don't, you know, you maybe brushed up against corporate media in their way they operate in a different way than we have? Is there another angle or tactic really for making them recognize the value of cable access?
You never know which came first, the mediocrity or the desire for the mediocrity, chicken or the egg scenario. You know, I always wonder, like, if you gave people access to Noam Chomsky, would they want more Noam Chomsky instead of giving them access to only Bill O'Reilly, and then therefore they want Bill O'Reilly? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a completely unknown factor. Like, I think if you gave people access to progressive liberal ideals, they would gravitate towards them, but they don't get that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's the average person has no access to liberal progressive ideas, so they wouldn't even know how to discuss it with you if you wanted to, because they would have no tools to do so. And but then again, if you say if they had that, would they keep wanting more of it? I don't know.
Yeah. So who do you currently admire in the world?
Gosh, so many people. I'm a Ralph Nader fan, George Carlin, Kaifa Pollitt, Bell Hooks, Alec Baldwin. I just think he's hilarious and a great voice for the left. He's just really says some really important, funny things. I like Dennis Miller. I like Ellen DeGeneres. I like the people over at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. I like people at the Southern Poverty Law Center. You know what I mean? Like, I admire so many people work, you know, nameless people that I don't know who they are. I just respect what they do.
A lot of people say that Americans aren't very politically active. Do you consider the kinds of, like, stand-up routine that you just did earlier today? And I actually saw you in Torrington when you were there, and you had your, you know, political and your social commentary. Do you figure that might be your strongest suit in terms of activism?
I would say it's the one I'm comfortable with, and I don't even know if people would consider it activism, because it's just me expressing myself. But I do feel a responsibility when I do stand-up live or even on television, but I don't do stand-up much on television, to speak my mind and to say what I believe to be some of the things that are dreadfully wrong with our mass media and our culture in general. And a lot of people in this current climate especially will accuse you of being unpatriotic. So I feel it's my responsibility to show that, you know, what I'm doing is patriotic. What's going on here today is patriotic. If you're just blindly supporting the current administration, that's about as unpatriotic as it gets. To me, that's how I see it. So if that's activism, then yes, it is. But it's I don't feel comfortable like stumping or campaigning for someone, like getting out at a rally. Like, I really don't like like, come on, vote for suicide, like that kind of strident talking at people. Whereas I guess you could say stand-up comedy is like talking at people, but I feel like I don't know. Like, there's been a couple of people that work for certain candidates say, will you come out and speak at this, you know, at this thing, or get people to vote? And I feel really silly doing that for like a particular candidate on a day, like when they go at like a whistle stop tour or something. I just feel like a real goofball doing that. So.
So how did you survive the apathy disease?
How did I survive it? Well, I mean, how are we all surviving it?
How,
we're all.
I don't know how you did it. I don't know how I did it.
Well, you know, we're all part of the apathy disease. We're all part of it. We all live with it, and we either choose to not be apathetic or choose to be apathetic. You know, I consider it my responsibility to educate myself and read as much as I can about everything, and to educate myself about politics as much as I can. And unfortunately, with mainstream media, you're only getting this much of the story, a little tiny bit of the story. So I make it my responsibility to read all kinds of alternative press or listen to as much different types of radio as I can. But see, it's so little access. But I try and get books published on little alternative presses that, you know, or if I hear that Noam Chomsky's speaking or Howard Zinn or The Nation is sponsoring some sort of seminar, I'll try and attend, you know, stuff like that. And, you know.
Is that it? Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I don't want to take too much of your time, but thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
New on CKLN, a show dedicated to exploring our media and pop culture. Hi, I'm Robert Valentine, host of Pop Journalism, a mix of music and spoken word, Sundays from 7 to 8 a.m. That's right, Sundays 7 to 8 a.m. And if you can't catch the show live, you can always visit the website at popjournalism.netfirms.com. And welcome back. Well, that's our show for this week. And as I said at the beginning of the show, I do have some CDs to give away. So I'll give you some details. This is Alex Lloyd. He's an Australian artist. His album is called Watching Angels Mend, and it comes out this Tuesday. It's a great album. I'm glad to stand behind it. It's sort of acoustic, but it has a trip-hop beat to it, and it's excellent singer-songwriting stuff. And we'll play him at the end of the show. Because of time, I wasn't able to play him in between the break. So if you want a copy of this, you can always call us right now, 416-595-1655. We've got about six of these, and we'll give them away online as well. If you send an email to popjournalism@rogers.com, you must be able to pick them up at the studio anytime after Tuesday. Again, 416-595-1655. Play his song right now. This is my favorite track from the song. Four of them I really like. This one is called Trigger.
Of Middle East peace as President Bush delivered his long-awaited manifesto on the future of the troubled region. Ladies and gentlemen, from the White House's fabled Rose Garden, the President of the United States has a message of hope, salvation, and optimism for the Middle East.
Israeli citizens will continue to be victimized by terrorists, and so Israel will continue to defend herself. And the situation of the Palestinian people will grow more and more miserable.
It gets better.
My vision is two states living side by side in peace and security.
Oh, great. That's it. Okay. Any questions? Nobody? Okay. I'm sorry. Yes. How? Okay. What's that? Where? Okay. When? Fine. Okay. Well, here's the when.
And when the Palestinian people have new leaders, new institutions, and new security arrangements with their neighbors, the United States of America will support the creation of a Palestinian state whose borders and certain aspects of its sovereignty will be provisional until resolved as part of a final settlement in the Middle East.
That seems very simple. All the Palestinians need to do is put in new leadership, new institutions, and new security, and then they'll have their own state, provisionally. Also they have to take this ring to mortar. And then they have to...
Okay.